Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
Welcome to the program. Today, we're focusing on cybersecurity and the Defense Department. In the first part of the program, we hear from a recent panel discussion at the AFCEA Washington Breakfast. The panel featured Richard Hale, the DoD Deputy CIO for Cybersecurity, who moderated the discussion, Dave Mihelchik, the Chief Technology Officer at the Defense Information Systems Agency, and Jack Womer, the Vice Director for the Development Business Center at DISA. We start off hearing from Mihelchik about his role at DISA.
You might say, what does a CTO know about cybersecurity? He doesn't have cyber in his title. Well, so years ago, I graduated from college, and I went to work for Richard Hale over there at a place called the Naval Research Lab, doing what we called communication security at the time, and eventually I started doing computer security. And then we sat down one day and we decided it's not about computing and communication separately, it's about information. So we started calling it information security. And then information assurance is what evolved into. It wasn't just about securing those bits, it was about assuring that the information and the missions it supported actually went forward. Then I got an honest job. I got out of that whole security business because it used to be awful. Invariably, we'd be brought in at the tail end of some program, and we would have to go to some poor Navy captain and say, you know, sir, your program is completely hosed because your contractors and your engineers never considered security. So I started doing command and control work, networking, and eventually technology at DISA, but my realization is that security cannot be the sole domain of cybersecurity specialists. It has to be owned by everyone, to include the program managers and engineers charged with the developing and acquiring the systems, the system administrators charged with operating the systems. We are going to have specialists. We're going to have the CPTs, the cyber protection teams. We're going to have offensive information, our cybersecurity forces as well. But cybersecurity cannot be their sole domain. So we, the developers, the technologists, and you, our mission partners, need to ensure that what we do is secure. So that's my opening statement. I would like to say one more thing. You might find it odd that there's two DISA guys on the panel, and there's actually a reason for that. Initially, I was supposed to moderate this panel, and about 2 weeks ago, we started getting emails from Richard's office saying, no, Mr. Hale is going to moderate this panel. So last week, I finally got a hold of him. I said, Richard, what the hell? You've taken over my panel. And he said, well, I really want to moderate this panel, and please let me do this. And he said, the primary reason is, he says, if I get you talking, I'm pretty sure I can get you to go off script. So my PAO is here today, so I will be in trouble probably by about 9 o'clock. Jack.
All right. Good morning, everyone. I'm Jack Womer. I'll spend the next minute or so telling the rest of the panel what it is I actually do, and hopefully you guys can pick up. Yeah, I haven't figured that out yet either. So I'm the, as Lisa mentioned, the Vice Director of the Development and Business Center. DISA had an internal kind of reshuffling of folks around about a month ago, and so that's hence some of the confusion in terms of who's doing which jobs. But that is my current position. I spent the past year running our infrastructure development group. As part of that reorganization, it's now called the Cyber Development or the Cyber Development Directorate. What that group is responsible for, so what I spent the last year doing, is basically building and acquiring all of the new cyber capabilities for the defense of the DoD networks. So what DISA is responsible for is basically everything from our internet access points, so all of our network traffic flows through internet access points, whether in the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines. DISA and some of our partners provide all the defenses at that level. We've just stood up a capability called the Joint Regional Security Stacks. That's another really important capability, consolidating the base, post, camp, station level security defenses into a set of regional nodes. And then also DISA provides enterprise services for protection of the endpoint. That's a keen point of emphasis for us now in terms of the capabilities that we put on those endpoints. So you may have heard of HBSS, Host-Based Security System, some of the other capabilities as well. There's an initiative that I know Mr. Hale is intimately familiar with called the DoD Cyber Scorecard. So many of the capabilities that we produce are also geared towards trying to automate the input to be able to give DoD a better appreciation for how effective our defenses are, what state the current DoD networks and computers are in. So my current job, that was the last job. The current job basically encompasses that. So in DISA, we have a set of directorates that are all grouped under centers. So I'm now the vice director for the Development and Business Center. What that center is responsible for is development and acquisition of all new capabilities that DISA buys, that DISA is responsible for. So we have everything from the requirements generation side, where we meet with mission partners trying to understand what it is they need from an enterprise perspective, working through the analysis of those requirements. We have two major development directorates. One is that cyber directorate that I mentioned. There's also a services directorate, which provides things like UC and cloud computing, things along those lines. And then we also have the Joint Interoperability Test Command under our center as well. And so JITC is something that's provided basically joint testing interoperability certifications for the past number of years. So obviously today's talk will focus on that cyber side, but thankfully we only reorganized a month ago, so I still remember a good bit about what it is we're doing there. Thanks.
All right, so thanks, panelists. So I have a few questions. Again, the email address is up there, questions@dc.afsi@chapters.org, and we will attempt to answer them. So now that we know the purpose of the panel is to see whether we can get Dave Mihalsik in trouble in the newspaper, why don't we begin? So we'll start right off with the purpose of the panel was, adapting to the evolving threat. And we know we have bad guys who are very capable, campuses full of people puzzling over how do you make it so the DoD is not dependable when we go to war. So the threat's evolving fast. So Admiral Branch, what needs to change in cybersecurity now, or how we do things now, to keep us up with this quickly evolving threat?
So that is a difficult problem. We have built a system that tries to ensure that everything is fair, that we equally give people the ability to compete for requirements. We've also put in place a system that requires us to plan up to 5 years in advance for what we want to spend money on. We put in place a system that requires us to upfront understand the requirements for what we want to buy. And then we put in place a system that requires lots of independent testing and validation. And the bottom line, as Admiral Branch said, is it can be years late to need. So let's say you're out there in the audience and you have an innovative new cyber capability and you come to me. I mean, the first thing I'm going to say is, well, we don't have a requirement for this. So now I'm going to go back to the joint staff, to the JROC, and I'm going to get them to validate a requirement. And let's say optimistically 6 to 12 months later that happens. Next, I'm going to try to lay in money through the POM, and optimistically that's a couple of years till that happens. I'm going to go through a competition, a contracting process. Optimistically, that's 24 months to completion. And then I'm going to do a CNA, certification and accreditation, and approve this before I get on the network. And optimistically, that's 12 months. So what are we up to? 5, 6 years. Thank you very much, whoever that was who was actually listening over there. 6 years until we get that deployed. It is absolutely broken. So what we need to do is, number one, we got to move away from purely requirements-driven to need-driven. So if we can identify a technology and determine that there is an unfulfilled need, whether or not that's a documented requirement or not, we need to be able to move that quickly to acquisition. Second, the acquisition process needs to be abbreviated, especially for IT and especially for cybersecurity components that are part of this IT infrastructure. Ideally, we would like to say, well, there's an innovative technology out there. I've identified that. I think it helps me solve a problem I didn't know I had. I still do want competition, right? I don't just want to be able to say that, I see one spoon, therefore I'm going to buy this spoon. Now I know that a spoon exists, so I want to say, anybody who's got a thing that's like a spoon, please send me a copy, and I'm going to see which one helps me eat cereal the best. So we can do that through very rapid fly-offs between vendors. And then when we're done, we need to be able to actually award them a contract, buy it. So we need an abbreviated system for getting money in the budget for, or at least available for buying those things. And then finally, onboarding to the network. Right now, we have an approach of You remember the old commercial, we will sell no wine before it's time. We have an approach that we will onboard no product to the network before it goes through every exhaustive test. I think, in fact, we've got to start taking risk in putting things on the network, do a very quick high-level evaluation of the security properties, deploy it, and fix it if it goes wrong, as opposed to going through 12 months or more of exhaustive testing. So compress all that down. We have an example of this going on already out at DIUX. DIUX was recently, I'm not going to say reorganized, but rebooted. That was Raj's term. So Raj Shah has been put in charge of DIUX. He's, among other things, has been a Silicon Valley VC, an entrepreneur, a VP of a tech company. And his concept is to do something sort of exactly along the lines of what I've said, where we'll be able to come to them with a need. We'll bring some money. They might match our money. They'll do a very abbreviated announcement of what they're interested in, get as many products to the table as they can, do an operational evaluation of those, potentially deploy them in the real-world network, figure out what works best, and at the end of it, have the documentation that's going to allow us to do a follow-on contract, a sole source based on that competition that's been conducted. So I do see some hope here.
We have to take a break. We are hearing excerpts from a recent panel discussion on DoD cybersecurity sponsored by the AFCEA DC chapter. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today, we're hearing excerpts from a recent panel discussion on DoD cybersecurity sponsored by the AFCEA DC chapter. I'm your host, Jason Miller. The panel included Richard Hale, the DoD Deputy CIO for Cybersecurity, who moderated the discussion, Dave Mihelchik, the Chief Technology Officer at the Defense Information Systems Agency, and Jack Wilmer, the Vice Director for the Development Business Center at DISA. We start off hearing from Mihelchik, who's continuing the discussion about what it will take to deal with the ever-changing cyber threats DoD faces.
Have to count on the entire workforce to be part of the cyber team, not just the developers and the program managers, as I was talking about previously. I would like to circle back to the particular system Mr. Wilmer was talking about. Jack, I hate to burst your bubble, but that's based on a pilot that I did collaboratively with our former head of cybersecurity. I think we started that 4 years ago at this point. So it took 4 years to cook that through our process so we could feel it today.
Yeah, don't get confused in me saying that this was the shining example of how we do things fast, rolling that out. But the bottom line is it's rolled out now. But as soon as we've got it rolled out, because it took 4 years, the threat has now evolved so that it's no longer as effective as it was intended to be and likely showed four years ago. And so, and the point is that I think we need to make sure that as we're looking at how do we keep pace with that threat, it can't be let's start another four-year process of trying to now find the next tool that can do a slightly better job. It's got to be, I think, that partnering with industry so that as their tool evolves to take advantage of that threat, that we can then make sure that we keep pace with that.
So as an audience participation game, the head of cybersecurity who I did that pilot with 4 years ago is actually now retired and in the audience. So if you can find him, I'll buy you a cup of coffee.
Okay, so I want to pile on a so thank you for sending in questions. We have a bazillion now. So let me ask one of them, and it's kind of piling on to the point that Jack Wilmer just made, that this idea of somehow acquiring a service that stays up to date, using industry to stay up to date with the threat rather than assuming that the government process will adapt. So here's the question. With the fast pace of systems that was just mentioned, how can Navy shift their acquisition strategies and authorities from buying things like planes and aircraft carriers with known fixed costs to paying for services over time without a known cost or a cost that varies over time, like cloud services, for instance? Yeah, this doesn't mean that we need an industry of people cyber attacking other industry people just so that we can have... But it's an interesting idea. So we have to be attributing attacks to actual bad guys. So to pile on, and again, this is a question that's hard to answer, and it actually says Richard et al., so this question is asked of me as well. As the speed of adoption of Internet of Things rapidly increases, and it sure is doing that, how do you envision DoD keeping pace and hopefully ahead of the threats? So let me start with Jack. So as a guy who's putting stuff in the infrastructure, Jack, what do you think about using some of the infrastructure defenses to protect things like airplanes and the nuclear reactors on ships and whatnot?
So I think that, so short answer is that there's a lot of capabilities that we have at the internet access points that if we can find a way to leverage them to protect those devices, I think we will be much better off. But the problem is that, you know, for example, and obviously Admiral Branch can speak much better to the afloat nature of things, but, you know, there's also the laws of physics in terms of what you can, from a routing perspective, you know, you have to make sure that you can still operate if you're in a disconnected or low bandwidth environment. So there's a lot of really good capabilities that we have that work really well if you're connected into one of our, you know, the GigBE, the backbone of our networks. But I think as you start to get further and further removed from those, the operational, you know, Richard, as you started out saying, the key to all this is dependable mission execution in the face of a capable cyber adversary. And so if we give ourselves really good defenses that ends up making the performance so bad that it doesn't actually operate anymore, then we've effectively denial of service to ourselves. But I think one of the areas where we are starting to do that is in the area of mobility, as an example. So being able to connect our mobile devices, iPads, cell phones, et cetera, back in through our gateways to be able to, you know, analyze traffic, take advantage of some of the capabilities that are there. And so I think that's a case where we're taking kind of away from the traditional, you're sitting at your desk and therefore you're protected by these boundaries, to now as you move out, you can effectively VPN in through and take advantage of those same protections that we have. And then the Internet of Things in general is obviously a lot more broad than just cell phones, iPads, things along those lines. And I think a lot of this, again, is going to come back to industry, because a lot of what is initially coming out, at least that I've heard, is that security is very much an afterthought with a lot of this stuff, with hard-coded usernames, passwords, things like that in the devices that, you know, for at least on the consumer side of things, they're really not focused on the cybersecurity aspect of that. And I think that, you know, as a lot of the discussion has been focused today, we really need, you know, industry effectively to step up its game in that space and understand that, and again, they've got very good motivations to do this, because as soon as their product is hacked, that's probably not going to be very good for sales, things along those lines, but really just tying into pretty much anyone who's developing a capability to think about, you know, as Richard has said many times, it's not a benign environment that you're getting put into, and a lot of people have sort of treated it as such. If it's a refrigerator, who's going to want to attack that? Well, I can't kind of imagine the ways, but at the same time, I'm sure someone's going to have some good reason to want to go after that. So,
I started the Navy's firewall program back in the 90s, so I was the one who built that crunchy outer shell that really didn't do what it needed to do. Now, the funny thing is, at the time, we knew that it wasn't going to be effective. We understood there were things called data-driven attacks that it could not prevent, things like spear phishing or malware injection. But my boss said I had to do it just the same. Richard was my boss, so we did it. Traveled the world. I got a lot of great TDY to the Pacific and to Europe, fielding firewalls for the Navy. But it was the other thing at the time, NSA started their Guards program, and that was another thing we understood had some significant vulnerabilities of malware passing. And at the time, NSA said, well, what we really need to do is we need to be able to a way to take the payload and run it and see if anything detonates. And there were no technologies to do this. Now, the good news is, folks like you out in this audience took that gap and actually have developed many commercial products that help us do that. So the email system Jack mentions is a detonation chamber based on a commercial product. So there are many opportunities to insert technology because industry is seeing the need, the capability gap, and then going out and putting their funding and their people against it. So there is progress being made on these fronts, and hopefully additional progress moving forward. One of the ones I'd like to mention is we have these debt chambers now, so we can take the content and run it to see what happens. But one of the problems we have is so much is encrypted. On average, about 50% of the traffic on the Internet is now encrypted using the SSL protocol. So we can't run that through our debt chamber. So what we're doing now is we have a program called Break and Inspect, where we've already piloted the ability to unwrap that layer of encryption at the SSL layer before, as it traverses our outer boundary to the DoD network, and then we can run it through not one, but multiple different cyber sensors in debt chambers. So we're going to take that from pilot to production next year, and we're going to be looking at the best technologies to help us with that problem.
And to be clear, that's only for DoD users. That's not us breaking and inspecting other encryption outside of DoD.
Right. That's not our business. We don't care what you guys do on the internet. We care about what comes into our network.
Although for you scholarship students and everybody else in the audience, be a little bit careful with what you do on the internet. So just a little. The kids know this. You guys already know this. The grown-ups in this crowd are not so savvy yet. So just to stomp this one just a little tiny bit. So part of the problem with the Internet of Things is it is not designed for a hostile environment, right? And as Jack pointed out, so we're in the middle of this shift, and we'll see how far we shift. DoD needs to shift quite far, but we'll see how far we get from designing and building and operating and maintaining as if the environment was benign, which is really what we do today, to all of those things being done with the idea that the environment's not benign, and we've got to set something up that gives us better properties for absorbing attacks, maneuvering around attacks, containing attacks, whatever it is. So fundamentally, we've started to put cybersecurity in as a requirement in acquisition programs now. It's something called a key performance parameter. The trick is going to be, what do we do with all those aircraft carriers and airplanes and whatnot that we've got in the inventory right this second that are also Internet of Things, because DoD went that way early. So we are working on that problem aggressively. And now this notion of cyber safe, right, which is this notion that things really do need to be dependable in the face of cyber warfare. They can't be subvertible, else, again, the military is not going to be ready to go when we need it to be.
We have to take a break. You're hearing excerpts from a recent panel discussion on DoD cybersecurity, sponsored by the FCA DC chapter. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. We're hearing excerpts from a recent panel discussion on DoD cybersecurity, sponsored by the FCA DC chapter. The panel includes Richard Hale, the DoD Deputy CIO for Cybersecurity, who moderated the discussion, Dave Mihelchik, the Chief Technology Officer at the Defense Information Systems Agency, and Jack Woolmer, the Vice Director for the Development Business Center at DISA. Hale leads us off with a question about the ever-changing attack approaches hackers are using against DoD.
Our cyber enemies use relatively lower-end technologies to infiltrate networks, then exfiltrate data. How can we stay ahead of all their techniques and recognize attacks in a timely manner, as not all attacks are all at once? So let me just say one more truth about cybersecurity, and then we'll let the panel get at this one. The truth is that in almost every attack that we see, and DoD sees a fair number of cyber attacks, bad guys exploit the same old preventable vulnerabilities that we've been saying we need to prevent for 20, 25 years. So bad guys may use very, very sophisticated techniques. They're incredibly clever, but it's some step in the attack life cycle, right? You know, you get in, you look around, you move around, you download stuff, whatever it is, you talk to command and control servers. In those steps, bad guys are using preventable vulnerabilities. So with that as sort of the backdrop, how do we get at this business of at least preventing that sort of cyber attack from working? So Dave.
So there is not a one-size-fits-all answer here. We got to be vigilant about ensuring that our systems are built secure. We use best practices when we design and field them. We got to be vigilant about patching those systems. We've got to be vigilant about operating those systems, not just talking about the cybersecurity professionals, but the system administrators, monitoring logs, et cetera. And then on purely the cyber front, not only putting in place those outer protection mechanisms at our internet gateways, and those we have multiple overlapping protections, we got to monitor what goes on in the network, and we've got to then use that data. So we have multiple initiatives in this front to include something called CSAC, Cybersecurity Situational Awareness Analytic Cloud, where we fuse the data from multiple sensors, Endpoint audit logs and run analytics against that to look for this kind of activity. Something else that I think we're going to see a lot more of, I think there's an opportunity here for industry, is what's known as hunt tools. So our CPTs today, our cyber protection teams, use tools to look for adversaries on the network. And there's a whole evolving set of tools that industry is developing to provide those, not just episodically, so that a team will deploy, look for bad guys, and then return back to their day jobs, but to be able to use these hunt tools on a persistent basis to look across the information that's available in the network to look for adversaries. So I think that we just got to assume bad guys are in the network and be continuously hunting for them. We asked for all these security features, and we don't use them. And I'm not just picking on one product. That's sort of across the board. We've asked for these features. We put them out as NIST standards. We put them out as requirements in the RFP. We've got to use them. So we have to figure out how to be more agile internally, not only to deploy that software and hardware, but then to use the features that industry is building in. So that is our challenge. And once again, it comes back to the whole development, the engineering, the acquisition, and the operational community have to partner. If there's a TPM chip in your server and you're not using it, there's a problem. And my guess is that most of the servers out there, for you government guys out there who own servers, you're not using the TPM chips.
I'll say, having an IT background, I generally think of exactly what Dave just talked about, servers, things along those lines. It's the embedded systems that I think are a lot more challenging. So many of you have probably deployed a patch or something like that hasn't worked, your computer blue screens, whatever that case may be. So what happens when it's an MRI machine? Do you want to just go ahead and deploy the patch? How much time of testing and other stuff versus the rapidly deploying the security stuff? And there's definitely got to be a balance.
Let me switch and just talk technology for a minute. We got some guys who either have or had CTO in their name. So in terms of a percent increase, can you describe the impact that analytics has had on threat detection and cybersecurity operations over the last 5 years, and how do you think that'll change over the next 5 years?
Jack used to own
a bunch of analytics stuff, so we'll turn it over to Jack.
I'll start with that. As with anything, there's not just a black and white answer. So there's certain use cases that we've done. One of them is called Fight by Indicator, as an example, which is where we receive reports of malicious activity. What happened prior to our analytics is that we would receive these reports, and then by hand we would have to go and translate these reports into figuring out, okay, here's the various countermeasures. So here's the blocks we're going to put in different tools to be able to defend ourselves against whatever these threats are. So we were able to automate a lot of that, and I think there was something, 500% increase in the amount of countermeasures that each analyst could implement, basically per day, which yielded, pick your number of thousands of additional countermeasures that we could deploy, every month, year, et cetera. So I think we've got some really good hard metrics there. But also on the other side of it is, we are investing a lot of money in that particular area. So in the ability to do, bring in all this data, trying to then figure out what are the analytics we want to run on top. And there seems to be an endless stream of desire for, hey, maybe we could take various sources of data and come up with this metric or this analytic or, all kinds of other areas. So I think very similar tie into the last question is, to me, a lot of what we're focused on is not necessarily what percentage, effective have we been just in the analytics space, but where do we really want to focus, those investments as we move forward so that we can take, I think, that next jump in effectiveness. And I think I guess an aspect of what I'm talking about there is getting to more of a near real-time ability to do some of these defenses. So not necessarily having to have the people in the loop to implement things or, whatever that case is. So how do we take this wealth of data that we've now collected for our DoD networks, and how do we actually start to have automated actions performed on them? And there's a whole lot of complexities in that space. But I think a lot of that ties into the analytics and some of the work that you can do across the data.
So we're about to see some quantum leaps in terms of our ability to rapidly develop, deploy, and utilize analytics for the platform. So in the August timeframe, we'll be releasing an update to the big data platform. That's the technology that underlies CSAC. And essentially what
Say what CSAC is.
I said it earlier. You weren't
say
listening.
It again.
Cyber Situational Awareness Analytic Cloud. It's a mouthful. But big data platform is essentially the underlying infrastructure that underlies CSEC. So what's going to come out in August is the ability to be able to essentially fork a copy of some or all of the data that's in the big data cloud and be able to run custom analytics on top of it that can be mission-focused, that don't necessarily interact with the rest of the platform. And the benefit of that will be is we'll be able to take commercially developed analytics or analytics that may be written on the fly by an operator out in the field and run those against some or all of that data without necessarily having it interact with the purpose-built and certified core analytics that, for example, run Fight by Indicator. So your guys tell me that that's supposed to be deployed in August, and I think that's going to give us this ability to really accelerate the development and deployment of analytics and potentially have those guys at the pointy edge of the spear, the operators who in our case are out at Scott Air Force Base in Illinois doing defensive cyber ops, be able to build analytics on the fly, and we're going to see much more emergent capability based on them being able to structure and restructure those analytics for their mission du jour.
We have to take a break. You've just heard excerpts from a recent panel discussion on DoD cybersecurity sponsored by the FCA Washington, D.C. chapter. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. After the FCA panel discussion, I caught up with Dave Michalczyk, the Chief Technology Officer at the Defense Information Systems Agency. I asked him to further discuss some of the initiatives he's leading at DISA around cybersecurity.
You mentioned a couple things that was I thought interesting. A big data platform that's going to be expanded in August. It's around cybersecurity and cloud analytics. Can you just talk a little bit more about what that is, how that works?
So we have something called Big Data Platform. It leverages technology that came out of the open source community, Hadoop, with security enhancements that have been built over the years by the government as well as commercial open source providers. And it essentially is a gigantic data lake with cybersecurity data. So we ingest data from our cybersecurity sensors, agents running on our end hosts, as well as other audit log mechanisms, and we can use that to build advanced analytics to do detection of cyber attacks and also the workflow associated with being able to counter those cyber attacks. One of the biggest applications of it today is something called Fight by Indicator, FBI, just to confuse people. But Fight by Indicator gives our analysts the ability to not only take the data about that attack, compare it against all known data, and then be able to pick the best cybersecurity mitigation mechanism and actually directly task that mechanism. So as Mr. Wilmer mentioned, it has improved our effectiveness in being able to detect, diagnose, and mitigate attacks by about 500%.
And the idea here is not just the data, because that's been around, but it's the tools on top of the data.
Exactly.
And it's multiple tools. It's not just one tool.
That is true, and that's why this enhancement that going to be released in the August timeframe is so important, because we had the existing platform, the big data platform, and CSAC, Cybersecurity Awareness Analytic Cloud, where the analytics that ran on top of it. And one of the problems that we had is the CSAC application or set of analytics were all certified and accredited and developed as one thing. And we wanted to come up with an architecture that it would allow us to develop other analytics for not just cyber purposes, but other purposes, like, say, network performance monitoring, and be able to rapidly deploy those. So by putting in place an architecture that allows you to take a copy or a virtualized instance of the data in that big data platform, in that analytic cloud, and use that for a dedicated purpose, you can run analytics that don't affect the other analytics running. So you have isolation between the various analytics.
And what comes from this is the idea that you're seeing malware, you're seeing threats, you're seeing vulnerabilities, and you can react to them. And not only that, can you react to them, but you can react to them in almost an automated fashion. Do I understand that right?
Absolutely. So, we have lots of data. We just need to be able to do something good with that data. So being able to bring the data together, correlate it, say that this event, say detection of an illegal IP address traversing one of our internet access points is correlated with a log event, someone rattling the door, say, of an end user a host within the Department of Defense, are actually the same event. Correlate those two events together.
together, determine that that is in fact a hostile attack and not just some random sporadic network traffic, and be able to then task an IA capability to mitigate that. So put an IP ACL block at the edge router or configure a rule within web content filtering to block that attack.
Now, previously, before this, you had this tools on top of the cloud, you had the data, but a lot of the process the way you guys described it was more of a manual process?
Manual and also isolated. So different system administrators had access to different pieces of data, and they would have to collaborate by talking to one another, say, hey, I'm seeing this in my log space, I'm seeing this at the boundary sensor, do we think that they're related? So now we have accelerated that collaboration. And as I mentioned, Fight by Indicator is not just an analytic to detect attacks, but it's also a collaboration tool to allow our teams that are distributed in multiple locations, including Scott Air Force Base, as well as DISA headquarters, as well as other cyber organizations, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, NSA, to be able to collaborate around what they're seeing and come up with the best course of action.
You mentioned this would be expanded. Right now, how many people or how large is this being used? And then when you talk about expansion, what does that mean?
In terms of our core analytics, it's used not only by the DISA defensive cyber operators out at Scott Air Force Base on the order of multiple tens, probably less than 100 personnel, but also it's in use by analysts at DISA headquarters as well as analysts from the services as well. So it is really a collaborative environment. In terms of expansion, that may not be in terms of raw number of users, but more analytics running on top of it, more data being ingested. And that's one of our challenges. We need to be able to get data onboarded into that cloud as rapidly as possible and then give people the ability to write analytics. And that's what this enhancement will do. We're going to be able to write analytics in the field now, something we couldn't previously do.
I want to switch gears and talk about another cyber initiative you talked about, which is the idea of encrypting. So much traffic is encrypted on the internet, and you guys are going to try to look at this traffic at the SSL layer and unencrypt it so you can know what's coming in and going out of your network. Talk a little bit about that initiative.
That's something called Break and Inspect. We've run a pilot over the past year. We have funding next year to expand and fully operationalize that capability. Essentially, what it comes down to is in your web browser, when it says HTTP, that data is unencrypted. When it says HTTPS, that data is encrypted. And if you'll notice, much more data is now HTTPS. All traffic going back and forth to Google is now HTTPS encrypted. So that's a good thing because it protects your transaction traversing the global internet, which can be a wild and woolly place. But the key is, since we have centrally located cybersecurity systems, we need to temporarily remove that encryption, be able to inspect the traffic to ensure there's no malware or adversarial activity within that encrypted tunnel, and then re-encrypt it and pass it along to the destination. So we have piloted that with one particular vendor to prove the concept. We've actually seen operational benefit in that. So all of the traffic from DISA headquarters out to the internet is being inspected at this point. We've actually seen operational benefit to that, and we believe expanding that to the whole Department of Defense is appropriate at this point based on the results of the pilot. And the goal is to reduce the number of injections of malware as well as potentially the command and control channels that are set up by an adversary once they do penetrate our systems.
And to be clear, you're talking about ones and zeros here. You're not talking about traffic as in if I send you an email that you can read my email. I just want to be clear what you mean by breaking the encryption. You're just talking about at the transport layer, if you will.
At the transport layer, yes. But everything is carried in the transport layer. So whether it be email, file downloads, or website access. And this is not being broken so that, you know, we can watch users conduct their day-to-day actions. It's being broken so we can feed the traffic through specific IA capabilities, some of them commercial, some of them government unique, to defend against attacks.
Just a real quick timing, when do you expect the expansion of this capability to happen?
So it's going to happen in FY17. We're going to continue with the pilot we have today. We will conduct an evaluation of not only the current capability, but of other industry competitive capabilities, determine what the best approach is, and acquire and deploy that in FY17.
One other similar initiative around cyber was a new capability, what was commonly referred to as an email sandbox. Can you talk about what that is and how that that works?
Right. So that's something called zero-day net defense. About 4 years ago, we conducted a technology insertion pilot in my office collaboratively with our head of cybersecurity at the time, Mark Orndorff. We evaluated commercial technologies that could essentially take emails, run them through a virtualized environment, and then determine whether or not there was any malware in. Commercially, that's known as a detonation chamber. We conducted that pilot. The results of that pilot resulted in an acquisition, a follow-on that we got funding to conduct. It's deployed operationally at multiple email gateways within the Department of Defense.
So the idea behind this is if I would send you an email and I attach a PDF, that PDF would go into that sandbox, you'd make sure it was not infected or it was safe to open, and then the user, could you open it? Does this happen automatically or is there a delay? How does it work?
It's all automatic. So the email is routed to the sandbox capability, the debt chamber. That's executed. It ensures that not only is the content in there benign, so the PDF file doesn't do anything malicious, but it also ensures that if there are any embedded links in that email, that they're benign as well. And this is extremely important. One of the vectors that we see exploited over and over again is there's some poor sailor sitting on watch at 3 o'clock in the morning. Somebody sends him an email. It looks legitimate. They click on a link, and that results in their computer becoming infected. And from that beachhead inside the DoD network, you can infect other computers. When I say some poor sailor, this is not a Navy unique problem. This is not a DoD problem. This is the entire global internet. If your home PC is penetrated, it's more than likely through one of these spear phishing attacks.
And when we talk about all these initiatives, are you guys at DoD able to quantify the benefits? Is cyber getting better? There's some talk on the panel about a return on investment, which is always difficult with cyber. But, for instance, I remember years ago, and the data is hard to find now, but someone mentioned when DoD implemented the CAT card, you guys saw a 54% drop or something to that effect in terms of the number of attacks in the network or the number of people successfully getting in the network. Are you able to quantify how these initiatives are impacting?
So, absolutely. We can quantify how they are mitigating the attacks that they were intended to mitigate. Now, the problem is adversaries adapt, and they adapt in real time to our changes in technologies as well as tactics, techniques, and procedures. So while we can say we have seen a 54% reduction in the amount of malware that's penetrating the DoD network via email attacks, we can't necessarily say that we have completely eliminated all attack vectors into the Department of Defense. So this is going to be an ongoing engagement with our cyber adversaries. As we patch one set of vulnerabilities, they will move to exploit others.
That's all the time we have for today. You've been listening to excerpts from a recent FCA Washington, D.C. panel on DoD cybersecurity. The panel featured Richard Hale, the DoD Deputy CIO for Cybersecurity, Dave Mihelchik, the Chief Technology Officer at the Defense Information Systems Agency, and Jack Wilmer, the Vice Director for the Development Business Center at DISA. And then you heard my post-panel interview with Dave Mihelchik. I'm Jason Miller. Thanks for tuning in this week.